Republican Representative Eric Severson of Star Prairie is retiring after 4 years in the State Assembly. He's represented the 28th District, which borders Minnesota. Representative Severson, thanks for taking the time.
Hey, thank you.
First question, why after 4 years are you moving on, sir?
Well, for the largest part, it has to do with my family. My children are twins. They just turned 6 years old. Oh. They're in kindergarten. It's just a lot more commitment for school, for activities. And there's just a lot more going on. And it's a long ways away from Madison. So.
How long does it take? How many miles?
It's 258 miles.
Is it? How many hours on a bad day or a good day?
Oh, 4 hours on a good day. And today took a little longer, snowing on the way down.
Yeah. So. You served at a time where the Assembly and the Senate made a lot of history. What are you most proud of having played a role in passing, sir?
Easily Act 10.
Okay.
That's definitely...
Did you come down to do something like Act 10? Was that one of the reasons that you ran?
Well, nothing specifically exactly like that. I mean, I wasn't writing up a bill like that. I don't think anyone had that idea exactly. But that was kind of what we were saying. We got to get the fiscal house back in order of the state. We have to get things going in the right direction. Essentially keeping our spending under control, cutting our taxes, and that was the biggest part of being able to do all that. So yeah. In a sense, that's what I did, but not with that specific plan in mind.
Did you think when you voted for Act 10, it would lead to the massive protest, having police escorts from the Capitol, having to use, I think it's the mail ramp under Martin Luther King? Your memories of that, sir?
Yeah, I obviously didn't expect that. I mean, who expects to have thousands of protesters down here and tens of thousands of protesters? You definitely aren't expecting that. The funny thing is, the first time we were escorted out, I saw Mark Onadel, Representative Mark Onadel, just walk in front of me. He was in jeans and a sweatshirt. So the next time we were being escorted out, I'd actually just brought a sweatshirt with and was wearing jeans on the assembly floor, this on top, and slipped on the sweatshirt and slipped out the back of the assembly, walked down the stairs with the protesters, and walked out with them. And then no one ever said anything.
Nobody said anything.
It was easier than going out through the tunnel.
Was there ever a time when you or your family was concerned about some of the threats to you, either in your capital or back home, Representative?
Yeah. Yeah, there was actually one weekend where some things had happened down here, and I called my wife. She was crying. Someone had just called their house and was swearing and yelling at her. And just with some of the threats that had been all week, she actually went up to my parents and took the kids for the whole weekend, and it was just gone for that amount of time. That rest of the week I was here, and then all the next weekend too. So yeah.
Three years later, what do you think the impact has been of Act 10, sir?
Well, I think there's quite a few things. I mean, one, we've obviously got taken the budget deficit and then turned it into a surplus. We've been able to give that back to the people in tax cuts. I think it's really moved Wisconsin to being at the forefront of what's going on in the nation politically. Those are, I think, some of the biggest things. I mean, some of the historic things that have happened afterwards because of that, including the recall elections and so forth, have just really, that's some of the biggest aftermath, obviously.
You worked with Sandy Pasch on the mental health reforms.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that rank in terms of the things you were able to get done in your 4 years, sir?
Well, I think it was very important. These are things that, we've talked about this before, where things hadn't been changed since the 70s with some of these things. And there's people who are in healthcare knowing that these problems are going on. So it was actually something that was really good to be able to work on. This is, something that when I first came in, Sandy had actually come and talked to me. Representative Pasch came and talked to me about it. Because I know it was very important for her.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, in the first session, we weren't able to get that done with a lot of other things that happened, and kind of there's a lot of more acrimony. And I think after Act 10, would have been really hard to do in that first session, just because, especially with the amount of time and effort that it took in. So, to do
those mental health changes are a series of pretty important changes. So I have two questions. Number one, why had they not been updated since the 1970s, Doctor?
Well, I wasn't elected.
I'm
kidding.
That's a fair answer, but
no. I don't know. I mean, there were things that there have been special investigative committees that had looked into these It was 2-4 years before I was elected. Mm-hmm. They started it. It continued on into the next election cycle. Even the first time I was, the first session that I was in, that committee was still meeting. I wasn't part of it, mm-hmm. But they were still meeting. And so these things had been being worked on before. Some of the bills we passed actually came out of that committee that had been working for all that time. Like I said before, I think some of that stuff from Act 10 kind of slowed that down at that time. Mm-hmm. However, why hadn't it happened before? I don't know. I mean, you'd have to go and probably talk to the prior speakers of, I mean, that was, you know, that was, you know, Fitz was in charge then.
Yes.
With that, and but then before that, and before that, and before that, and before that, hard to say why, why something wasn't done at that point.
I was surprised in a recent interview, Sandy told me it would not have happened were it not for the Sandy Hook tragedy.
Yeah, I heard that, and I thought that was kind of.
Do you agree?
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that, and in the sense that I think that we've got, like I said, some of the stuff had been worked on for 4 years. Before we even started meeting as the special mental health task force, mm-hmm. I think also you look and say this. She's actually said it many times before. You don't know, it has nothing to do with that. So I find it interesting that she said that, but I don't agree with her on that. And we can both live with that. I think
it's not rare, but not very many physicians serve in either the Senate or the Assembly. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Do you think?
Well, that's a good question. I just talked to some large group of physicians down here a couple months ago and just tried to encourage them to get involved.
Did you?
Yeah, and then I've talked to a few since then, actually from both sides of the aisle, who were saying to me, how do you get involved? How do you do this? I think a large part of it comes, you go through medical school, you go through residency, or you finally start your practice, you're 35 years old, 30 to 35 years old, you spend, 10, 15, maybe 20 years paying off all your debts.
Yes.
Now you're suddenly
on your
50,
own, probably with a young 50, thing.
Yeah, you got probably some young kids, or they're starting to grow up. By the time they're moved out, you're 60 years old, and you think, wow, there it just went. I think it's a large time to commitment.
Are you getting some of your fellow doctors saying, I'm thinking about running for the state legislature?
Yeah.
Are you encouraging them or discouraging them?
I'm encouraging them, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But are you also warning them that you'd have to dial back from your practice and things
like that? Well, I try to tell them. I mean, it's a balance. You have to look at whether or not, if this is important enough to you. Like you asked why I came in initially, and it was, I couldn't sit back and just complain anymore. People have to get involved. You have to say, hey, this is what I think, this is what I believe, and this is what I'm going to do. And so I think that that's why I did it. And so if another physician is looking and saying, oh, this is not that important to me, they should realize, well, it does take a lot of time and effort and work. And so if it doesn't mean much to you, don't go and do it.
Did the Affordable Care Act play any role in your running for the assembly?
It actually really did not.
Did not?
No.
Okay.
It had more to do with fiscal things. And granted, that has obviously a very large fiscal effect, both in the state and in the country, but that didn't really play that was not a big role at all.
With the healthcare debate nationally, what, if any, difference can one state make, sir?
Well, that's a good question. I guess it also depends on how a Supreme Court would rule on a law. I think one state could make a really big difference, depending on what they do. And the hard thing is, anytime you're talking about what the states can do with healthcare, is that the federal government sends a lot of dollars to the state, mm-hmm. in Medicare dollars, and that was every single one of those dollars and every penny has a big string attached to it. It has to be spent in a certain way, so it would be hard. But could one state make a difference? Yeah, they could make a big difference. It would have to take some courage and have to take some forethought, but I think one state could make a big difference.
What about the decisions that Governor Walker and people like you made? Twofold. Number one, Wisconsin is not going to set up its own exchange.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And number two, we're not going to take the federal cash and expand MA.
Yep.
Were those wise choices, or if so, why?
I think they're very, very wise choices. When you start with the second part where you're talking about expanding the medical assistance with the federal dollars, is And you hear all the time, well, this is just free money. It's free money. Well, first of all, it's coming from the federal government, so we're paying the taxes anyway. Somewhere, we have to either pay more taxes to cover that or have more debt, which we'll have to pay back eventually anyhow, in one way or in another. And so it's not free money. The other part of it is that the federal government said that it's only going to be 100% right now guaranteed. Say, so, yeah, maybe next year, for sure it'll be 90%. Mm-hmm. But there isn't ever a cap on what it is. Like I said, once you start spending those dollars, there's always a string attached. One of those strings is once you spend those dollars, you have to continue to spend those dollars. Right. And so if the federal government decides, well, we're not going to give it to you now. Let's say the federal government decides to get its fiscal house in order also, says we got to cut spending, we're going to send less money to the states. You guys still have to cover all these things though. Well, now we're on the hook, which, you know, this could happen for sure in 2 years. It's going to be less money. They're going to give us less. Mm-hmm. They're going to cut 10% of what they gave. So, but that doesn't have to stop there. It could be 75%. It could be 60%. It could just keep on going down.
Okay. And what about the first policy decision, not to set up our own exchange?
Well, I think that was a very good idea. I mean, you look at look at what just happened in Oregon. They just shut their whole system down. They shut their whole state, everything about it, and said, forget it. Yeah. We just spent $50 million or more than that. Same thing in Minnesota. They haven't quit on the thing. Don't get me wrong. But their computer program system, their internet portal, has been so bad that they actually just shut it down and said, we're going to have to. They spent millions and millions of dollars on something that didn't work. And they're going to have to either spend millions of dollars to fix that or millions of more dollars to build a new one because it was operating so poorly. So I think for the Wisconsin, just for the state taxpayer, to refuse the money to go, that went for increasing MA and to not build up our own exchange, I think was a very good idea.
As a physician, when President Obama says, well, the ACA has been a success because 8 million Americans have enrolled, what's your response as a physician? Is there any yeah buts that should be added in there?
Well, I would stop. I mean, there's so many things with that statement that are flared. First of all, to say this is a success because of this would be wrong, unless that's all there. That's the only way he's defining success is just by saying we're enrolling people. I mean, I think the goal is to have better health care for everyone, and I can tell you right now from personal experience, having that health care already is being run worse in every hospital. Than it was before, just because of the burdens. And if you want to see this, I was actually just reading an article. The guy probably put it much better than I did in the Wall Street Journal. A physician from California actually wrote. He could have just been writing the words out of my mouth, and it was very interesting to see because I was like, this is exactly the same problems that we're facing at our hospital, our clinic, and also all the other hospitals and clinics and people I talked to in the whole state. So to say, oh no, it's been a success because we have these people. I mean, there's a few problems with even using that number. Is that number one, they're never going to be able to test that. How many people actually got signed up new for insurance? Because I don't know if you saw what the what's the group? The people count the people in the whole country. And the next, they never will. They usually ask the question, but they even said, "Hey, we're changing our question, so they'll be completely different numbers. They'll be comparing apples and oranges." And so we'll never know, which I think is interesting. Second part is how many of those people didn't have insurance beforehand? Versus how many people signed up for it who had their insurance plan canceled, an insurance that they liked, an insurance that they were told they were able to keep. And how many of those 8 million people have started paying their premiums, which is also a big question. I mean, because if we're going to try to keep the premium prices down and the prices of insurance overall, if people haven't started paying them, the insurance companies are going to be increasing their prices also.
Leaders of your party in Washington are being criticized for not offering an option to the Affordable Care Act. If they sought your advice, what advice would you give them in terms of what to offer, sir?
Well, there's a lot of different things that would be done. To go into it, that would probably take us an awful lot longer than what we have today to go through everything.
Just one or two things?
Well, one thing I would do is, number one thing you have to do is just start cutting some of the government government burdens. I don't want to call them regulations, the burdens that are on the physicians and the providers, healthcare providers. You know, this is one of the things that talk about. We spend so much time being data entry people on a computer, doing a job that is, you know, low skill, and you're taking the people who are the highest skilled, the highest workers in a hospital, in a clinic, mm-hmm. and saying, here, let's have you do this low skill job. You're really well trained to do something else. You're really well trained to be with patients, to take care of patients, but let's have you be a data entry clerk. And so, I mean, just in and of itself, I mean, just if you're able to free that up and said, okay, let's have people see more patients, we're going to have more access, we're going to have more openings, people are going to get better health care. That's just one small example. And, you know, when you said that, you know, the party's being criticized for not having an alternate plan, I mean, Paul Ryan has a plan. There's lots of people that have alternate plans out there. Mm-hmm. People just don't want to talk about them. The press doesn't want to cover that. They want to just continue to say, hey, there is no alternative. Let's report the news instead of trying to drive the news, but sorry.
That's okay. What healthcare issues are unique to Wisconsin, doctor?
And how healthcare issues are unique?
And how are they going to change in the future? Anything strike you?
I think one of the healthcare issues we have is, you know, there's a older rural population. And I can't say that this is only unique to Wisconsin, because I think you see the same thing in Minnesota and parts of the Dakotas and some other places that have been historically large farming communities. Mm-hmm. You have a rural population with these elderly people who are farming or are still even farming. And as time goes on, they're going to need more health care, and they're going to need more health care access. And we're actually driving that in the opposite direction in many ways. And again, I mean, some people don't want to go out to rural communities. It's always been a little bit of a problem. And I, you know, we were just at in a hospital meeting last week. It was very much became clear that the ACA is also driving that, and Obamacare is making that, it's going to be making that situation even harder to deal with.
Oh, understand.
Even though the goal is to not. I mean, it's right. It's a little, the Obamacare is a little frustrating for me as it comes into effect, because you realize that they're literally trying to build the airplane while they're flying it, which is a very, very difficult thing to do.
I meant to ask you this earlier. What do you consider the biggest thing that wasn't done during your 4 years? If you were reelected, your number one priority would be?
I'd like to see right to work, you know, where people don't have to join a union if they don't want to.
Okay.
I understand. That's me. I'd like to see that. That's a huge political fight and a lot of change, but that would be something that I would what I'd want to do.
There seems to be a generational change going on within the within your party, the retirements of Congressman Petri, Ellis, Schultz, Representative Castell. What's going on?
I can't answer for all of them.
Okay.
Is it a generational shift? I mean, there's definitely a difference in philosophy on, you know, some of the people. I got along with all those individuals. I didn't know Congressman Petri at all, but
right.
The others I knew and got along with, but yeah, we had differences of opinion on quite a few things. I mean, you think about Senator Ellis, when he was originally elected, I wasn't even born. You know, I think Nixon was president. And I guess in a sense, in a lot of ways, he's still maybe a Nixonian Republican, which I'm very much not. And his views have obviously changed over the years, too.
Okay.
But I think there is there's some philosophical differences. Mm-hmm. But I can't say that it's a generational difference. I mean, there's people who are born before me who have the same views as I do also.
Is it healthy that they seem to be... some of these leaders are getting replaced by those that are more conservative, like yourself, sir?
Is that healthy?
Yeah.
Well, I would say that's good. Okay. But I mean, that's my view. But I mean, at the same time, that's who the people are voting in. So you can't say, oh, look, it's this conservative person winning, therefore that's the problem. I mean, they're still winning an election.
Yeah.
So it's the people voting them in, and that's what the people want. If they didn't want it, there'd be someone else there doing something different. So I mean, that's an interesting. It's an interesting question to say: is that healthy? Is democracy healthy?
Right.
You know, is a republic healthy?
Yeah,
I would say yes.
I use the term healthy in terms of the dialogue and the debate in terms of our politics.
Well, I mean, you could say the same thing that on the other side. Is it good that the, you know, some of the people who, you know, you think about what's her, I can't even think of a couple of people's name that I worked with last time. They got taken out in primaries by people who were much, much more left-hand leaning.
That's true.
You know, Jason Fields, fantastic guy, great to work with.
Yep.
It was really sad that he wasn't here this time around.
Okay.
So, you know, that's, he got taken out in a primary. Is that healthy? I mean, if you stock votes for debate, no, but that's, again, that's what the people who are electing these representatives voted for.
And maybe a final question, what advice are you giving the next person who serves in the 28th district, sir?
Well, you got to work hard and put in time and enjoy it while you're here, too. Enjoy it. Get some work done. So.
I understand. Yeah. Representative Severson, thanks for talking to Wisconsin 9. Good luck, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Good luck.